so significant to you?
Because it's compelling officers to act. It's Garrity questions, and again, I don't want to go into the legalities of it, but also, and like I said, also part of it is that we didn't have any input in this, and maybe we could have come to something that would have worked for everybody.
So after the holidays, let's have that discussion.
Yes, I am truly open to whenever anybody calls me, I'm there. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question. Can community members be involved?
Well, that's why we have hearings, but sometimes when we negotiate.
But I mean,
I'm thinking that we need to have some discussions with community members. If somebody like Casey Jama, who's been involved in this for, as he said, four administrations, I think has good advice to give. The NAMI Multnomah also has a lot of experience. So maybe we can't convene the community advisory board required by the Department of Justice until we've hired the community liaison group. So that's the way that has to work. So we can't convene the community advisory board, but perhaps we could have an ad hoc group to look at this particular proposal and what else might be done while we're waiting for the rest of the Department of Justice settlement to happen. So, and I would certainly, if I'm involved in it, which I'm leaning towards hoping to be,
I would like to be
members.
Involved as well.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thanks. Good.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay. Next three.
The last two who signed up are Bruno Amici and Joe Walsh.
I took a shower. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice, and I'm very, very tired. I think the president of the union is right. I think you have a problem with when you're a union representative, it is not your choice to represent people. It is by statute. It's by federal statute by the Department of Labor. And I know you know that. It's mandated that you have to represent your employees. What does that mean? It means that you don't mess around. You represent them as far as you can represent them. And you fight for them as far as you can fight for him. So a lot of his testimony has value. And you should listen to it, because an employee being cross-examined by an independent review board has a right to union representation being present. What does that mean? Is he a potted plant, like we like to use? No. The union representative, if he hears a question that he thinks could get this employee into trouble, he'll end the session, because you have this very sharp, almost razor-like ledge that you walk between the civil and the criminal. And when you deal with police officers, it crosses over. It used to cross over in our federal sector all the time. A fight on federal property is different than a fight on a street. So it's very, very precarious for the president of the union to have one of his union representatives in a room with a guy that may end up being criminally charged if he answers the question. So what does the union rep do? Does he say, that's it? So it's very complicated. Your independent review board must be independent. But there was one part of the testimony today that really intrigued me when somebody said it's a fact-finding group. That's what they should be doing. Now, the question is, when they get all the facts, who do they turn it over to? And I object to the chief. Because if the chief sits on the top of the pyramid of the discipline, you always have at least an image problem. And if he changes one thing that the IPR represents, you have another image problem. I think it should be you. I think it should be the commissioner. I think the IPR should report to you and not the chief. As much as you can get the police department out of this system, you must do that. Because the more they're involved in it, the more it's my buddy that you're asking me to put on the street. He's got two kids. It's my buddy. It's got to be independent, and it's got to answer to you, not the chief.
Joe, can I just say something? I appreciate you wearing your IBEW hat on how you balance these rights, because I think you're right. But I'm not sure it matters, the distinction you're making about just being fact-finding. I'm not sure that matters, and I'll give you an example. When the Congress hauled Oliver North to testify, that was fact-finding.
Wait, I have to get some oxygen, because you're spitting right now.
Can I get it for you?
No, I'm good, I think.
You have our permission to bring that. You have our permission to bring that with you in the future.
Well, it goes with me.
Our
everywhere.
Encouragement.
Our encouragement.
The only point I wanted to make is, I'm trying to understand the distinction, like fact finding. So when the Senate compelled Oliver North to come testify about his misdeeds, and he said, "You can't make me incriminate myself," and they said, "You will answer the questions," and he did.
Yes.
A federal judge threw out his conviction.
Yes.
Because he had been compelled to give testimony against interest in a fact-finding setting, in a forum.
It's a little more complicated than that. It's called use of immunity.
Well, there's immunities that can be given here. The question is the IPR the right entity?
Oliver North was a really strange case because they did compel him to say things. Use immunity has limitations on it. If you grant full immunity, he would have went to prison. Or no, he couldn't go to prison because you gave him immunity. What normally happens is they say, DAs do this too. We will give you immunity, now you have to answer the question. So if there's no possibility of criminal charges, you have to answer the question.
So how does the IPR give immunity?
I'm saying the IPR should only do administrative investigations, and you have to keep the investigation separate. So if there's a criminal investigation, surely Internal Affairs should do that one. But if there's an administrative investigation, it should be completely separate. The IPR should turn around and say, here's what we find. The question is, who do you give it to? And my argument, again, is it should be to the commissioner, because that makes them independent of the police, and that's your vulnerability, that the people out there look and say, okay, who are they answerable to? They're answerable to you, not the chief of police. Nice guy, but you got to get him out of the system as far as the investigation goes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know it's a little complicated.
No, thank you very much.
Think about a charter amendment, too.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Anyone else that wants to testify?
That's all who signed up.
And do we have further questions for staff, anyone? Then the question now is, where and how do we schedule this? And I think we might need the auditor and Constantine here for that.
Constantine and the two folks from the attorney's office to address a couple of matters that have come up. My plan is to bring this back to council for a second reading on January 2nd.
Second reading is one of the options.
So maybe I just kick it off?
Yeah,
I mean,
please.
This is a fascinating hearing. We have a bunch of people testify that this is watered down, doesn't go far enough, and doesn't get it true accountability. And we have some other people testifying that if we proceed with the package in front of us, it's likely to be stalled and administrative proceedings and court fights over our ability to do even this version. So we're not ultimately the deciders, the final deciders on that, but any guidance you'd like to offer us on the question of our authority to make these changes?
You want me to go ahead?
Yeah. We've taken a pretty careful look at this, and in our opinion with the city does have the authority to go ahead and make these changes. There's case law under the State of Oregon Employment Relations Board, which confirms that generally an employer, how an employer conducts an investigation is a management right that, and management gets to decide how they're going to conduct that investigation. There are some, if there are fundamental fairness issues that are involved, that could trigger a duty to bargain some of those issues. But in this particular case, who is asking the questions of an officer, in our opinion, is not one of those fundamental fairness issues that triggers a duty to bargain. The real key, and this addresses, I want to address an issue that was raised by the National Lawyers Guild attorney. The real key in terms of the bargaining is the who is, and in terms of discipline for an officer failing to cooperate with the investigation or failing to answer questions, is who has the authority to compel that officer to answer those questions. And again, in our opinion, that under the case authority, Garrity, and other cases that have followed, that has to come from someone who has discipline and discharge authority over that employee. And that's the problem with under the current, the way the system is currently set up here in the city of Portland, with having the with IPR purportedly compel that testimony. But the way we've structured this, it's not a fundamental change. First of all, we believe it's a management right to decide how the investigations are going to be conducted, whether it's by IPR or by internal affairs. Also, under the current code, IPR has the authority to conduct independent investigations. Now, the structure of how that's done has obviously been addressed in these code changes, but
So if we believe it's a management right and we don't have to bargain, is there a downside in having the conversation that the union president has invited and that Joe Walsh testified to, or is it, does our having this conversation somehow concede that we don't have the management right?
Well, I'll just say, in my personal perspective, I don't think there's generally ever a harm in sitting down and having discussions. There are issues out there, whether you're formally engaged in bargaining or you're having discussions with them about the impacts of these changes. I think that's helpful. Anytime you can have, the more discussion you can have, the better, to understand different perspectives on how this applies.
I would say, particularly since this is a very complicated area, I mean, we're hearing from almost everyone testifying this is complicated, they're trying to get their arms around it. I just wonder, between now and whenever we take this up again, if there's any harm in having those conversations. I don't know whether they'll change Mr. Turner's view of it, but is there any harm in us having those conversations?
I don't see any harm in having those. Now, there may be a dispute over what those discussions are, whether the union is saying, well, we're acknowledging that we're engaging in bargaining, or if we're saying, well, no, we're not engaging in bargaining, we're just having a discussion. But you do get into those disputes sometimes. But generally, I don't see any harm in having those discussions, at least from the legal perspective.
As an IPR representative in this, as part of the auditor's office, we're not in the position of trying to bargain for the city, but I'm quite willing to have a conversation with Daryl Turner or Parman or whoever represents PPA or PPCOA members between now and January 2nd. Our goal in trying to craft these code changes was trying to have that median point between the extremes that we've heard today, so that these code changes are watered down, they're minimal, to this is a fundamental breach of the city's obligations. What we've tried to do is basically meet our constitutional obligation as a governmental actor, that we're providing these officers with adequate notice that provides them constitutional warning about the interview that's going to proceed, and provide them notice that they're going to be compelled at 48 hours, and at the same time meet the community's expectation that we are actually an independent office, that we are part of the auditor's office, that we are going to do independent investigations when we feel that we need to, and not avoid independent investigations because the process within our city code is so cumbersome that it creates a perverse disincentive to doing that. The consequence of us waiting for the two extremes to come at some sort of median on their own is actual complainants right now who we feel that we could do a better job by them by these particular code changes, worked with the city attorney's office, and do that better. I think sometimes we get in a position of having the perfect being the enemy of the good. I think that these code changes set a foundation for us as moving forward. If there are other conversations that need to happen of setting us forward about what we need our oversight system to look like and who partakes in that, I think that is a conversation we're willing to have. But we shouldn't mistake all the different people who have testified today that they're going to come to some sort of agreement, whether it's 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, or even 2 years from now, because the same issues that we had in the 2010 stakeholder conversation are very similar to what I've heard this afternoon. So our goal is trying to have something that is legally enforceable and at the same time move the city forward.
Well, and I appreciate that because, I mean, we have some history with that. You know, over a year ago, the voters adopted a set of reforms that apply to our police and fire pension system. They have not been implemented. They're tied up in litigation over whether the city had a duty to bargain over them. It's a year later. So this is an important issue to put on the table because what we hear consistently is reform now. So if we don't get these rights, these issues right, it has the effect of stalling change and reform. And I would argue, my guess is that even some of the folks in this room that think that we haven't gone far enough would be especially disappointed if even these reforms could not be implemented. And that's the dilemma.
Ellen, do you have any guidance for us?
I would just say that two observations from having participated in this process. The auditor and IPR Director Severe have been very articulate in explaining the intent behind these amendments. And that was particularly helpful when talking to the Bureau about these changes and the Bureau coming to support these changes. So I do think there's value in explaining that to the PPA to the extent that they feel like they've been shut out and they don't understand. I definitely think there's value in that. And as you pointed out, Commissioner Fish, the thing to balance is whether or not those talks will result in such delay that there's no value in having them. And I think that's a dilemma that, you know, you all will have to figure out if it's worth the delay to engage in those kind of conversations.
Oh, we knew this morning that if we did not accept the terms of the negotiated contract, we were looking at the possibility of a one-year delay because of the alternative process, which ends in interest arbitration with a winner and a loser. So there's trade-offs on both sides.
Well, I'm interested in having some of those conversations take place, but that doesn't mean we can't keep this on the calendar, right?
Well, as Officer Turner pointed out, some of us are not going to be here for the next week right. or more. So setting the expectation that we can convene citizens as well as staff, as well as myself, in the next 2 weeks, next week before January 2nd is, I think, unrealistic. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there are a number of the provisions of the changes which we've heard no testimony against. The concept of the duties of the Citizen Review Committee, the number of folks on the review committee, the expectations for them. I'm just looking through the packet here, and there's a number of elements that are completely non-controversial and which we could easily move to adopt on January 2nd. There are others that I think would benefit for some more conversation and for some dialogue and looking to can we get to at least more understanding, because what I've heard, particularly about the compelling testimony piece, neither side is happy with it at this point. So that, if we can't get, that just doesn't seem like there's been enough discussion of understanding the other points of view that are involved and looking at, are there other options?
Well, Commissioner, in light of that, can I make a suggestion that we just keep the current schedule for a second reading? And then prior to the second reading, we decide as a body, because we still have, as a body, have to decide this question, do we go to a vote? Do we carve out a piece that we believe is ready to be voted on? Or do we delay it further? But at least have a control date in 2 weeks so that we can have some certainty in that decision making.
I think that's possible, but remember the second is our next meeting period.
Right. And so the first is a holiday. So there's the Monday, which I guess we could all get together and figure that out. But I have my son coming home from Chicago, and I intend to spend time with him over Christmas week. I know. It's selfish, but there we are.
What's your suggestion for a date?
Beyond the second.
So that would be the 8th.
The 8th to make a decision on what parts are non-controversial.
Use the 8th as a control date, and by this, by the Friday the 3rd, see if we can get consensus for how we're going to proceed.
Right.
I would second that.
All right, let's give that a try. So we will schedule this for second reading on January 8th. And
we get a time certain on that, Mayor?
Why not? I think we should be able to, given that it's 3 weeks away. Are there any available, Carla?
Yeah, we can move you to the, about how much time do you think it might take, though?
Give it an hour plus.
Oh, let's do the 3 o'clock time certain.
3 o'clock on the 8th.
Yeah.
Thank you all. That is the conclusion of that.
Let me just clarify. It would be continuation of this hearing because we might be amending
second
it.
Second reading,
but we can. That gives us the option of passing a portion, all of it, or continuing the hearing.
Do we have to take testimony on amending it to take some pieces out?
I think that probably depends on the scope of the amendments. I mean, it's going to be up to you whether you want to do, whether you'd actually be, I guess, continuing this to deal with the amendments or actually having a second reading.
Well, if we have a second reading and we just only adopt a portion, it seems to me that's, well, there's no prejudice there. It's within our right.
Okay.
It is, and that I presume that would involve introducing amendments in advance of January.
And we may take testimony on the amendments.
I think that's good.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We are adjourned. We are adjourned until January 2nd. Happy holidays.
My staff are going to upload.